2017. Welcome to our public hearing on the Public Safety Subcommittee House Bill 5013. We will begin in just a moment when Rep. Huffman finds his seat.
And it's always Huffman.
In the meantime, we have Justice Ballmer, we have David Moon, and John Fagan to continue our presentation. And gentlemen, you may pick up whenever you're ready. Thank you for returning today. We look forward to more exciting adventures with you.
Representative Stark.
Oh, yes.
I just want to apologize. I have to head off for a meeting, but I'll try to get back and try to get more information from you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Moon. I'm the Director of the Business and Fiscal Services at the Oregon Judicial Department. I'll let John introduce himself in a little bit, but we're going to be here today to talk about several things of our budget. We're going to start with our budget components. We're going to talk about revenues and collection systems. We're going to discuss current service level and our budget reduction strategies. So I'll dive right in with our budget components. We have other funds, general funds and federal funds at the Oregon Judicial Department. This slide represents just the general fund components. There's quite a few of them. So I'll just kind of touch through them briefly. The operations, that's the main component of our general fund, and that's where all of our court staff costs are held. Those are for the circuit courts, the appellate courts, and as well as the state court administrator's office. We have a specific component, the judicial compensation, that's restricted only for the use or for the payment of judicial salaries. We pay for our trial, our jury costs, as well as our interpreters and our accommodations for American Disabilities Act through our mandated payments component. You've heard of our e-court successes, and we have a component in our general fund that's strictly for the maintenance and service on our appellate system of e-court. We also have some components of our budget that are indirect related to the mission of our of the Oregon Judicial Department, including a component to pay the bonds, the debt service on bonds that we've put in the e-court project, as well as the courthouse replacement projects. We also have a component where we collect and pay for the third-party collections costs. So this is to pay the Department of Revenue and third-party collection agencies. We also pass money through to counties for programs such as Law Library, Mediation and Conciliation, and we pass money to the Oregon Law Commission and the Council on Court Procedures. Our other fund components are also numerous. We have a State Court Technology Fund. This is where we'll collect fees as well as pay payments to our vendors for licensing and maintenance for these systems. We'll talk in more in detail on those tomorrow. We have a component where we pay for our judicial marshals as well as local county court security. We also pay for improvements to courthouses out of our security and facilities funding. That is paid from allocations from the criminal fine account. We have a component for paying the cost of the state law library. We receive agency assessments. They go into that component. We pay for, we have an account where we collect funds that we receive for selling publications, for binding up the final opinions of the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and the Tax Court. We also receive grant funding for our Citizens Review Board, our Juvenile Court Improvement Programs, other drug and other treatment court programs across the state. And one of the newest components to our budget is the Oregon Courthouse and Capital Improvement Construction and Improvement Fund. That is where we put the bond funds from the state when we sell bond funds to go into this program, as well as we collect the state, the county matching funds go into this account, and then we pay those back out to the counties for the expenses in the construction projects. Finally, we also have a component in our other funds to pass monies through the legal aid program that's managed by the Oregon State Bar. We're going to discuss a little bit about our revenues that come into the Oregon Judicial Department, and then our collections processes. So first of all, when we have a case that's filed, a civil case, for example, those fees come in and go to the general fund. We have fines and assessment that come in on criminal cases. Those go to the criminal fines account. When restitution payments are made, we turn those back and pay those to victims. We also receive other funds for grants. As I mentioned, we also get funding from the Criminal Justice Commission for grants, as well as federal grants. We have publication sales. I mentioned those a moment ago, where we bind up those final opinions of our appellate courts, as well as tax court, and subscriptions to our technology fund. So I'm going to turn a little to the data on the revenues. This chart shows the total revenues that are collected by the Judicial Department over these eight biennia. I'll kind of start in the middle. In 2009-11, you'll remember this as impacts from the Great Recession were hitting us. There were surcharges put on criminal, or rather violations and civil motions. That generated about $30 million in that biennia. And there was collections that were generated over the next couple of biennia. And in 11-13, we were collecting some of those surcharges. And you'll notice that some of the categories change. Criminal fines were directed into the criminal fine account, or fines off of criminal cases were directed into the criminal fines accounts. Civil fees were directed into the general fund, and this allowed, instead of making distributions before the money came into the state budget, we would put the money all into the state budget, and then the legislative process would turn those allocations and appropriations back out to the programs. Some of those surcharges were kind of completed, or we'd collected all the surcharges that were remained by the 13-15 biennium, so the revenue started to settle back down towards more normalized ranges. We also had a decrease in the violations amounts, so each citation violation amount was decreased. So there was a little bit lower revenue coming in during that time period, as well as some of the citations were cited into municipal and justice courts rather than into the circuit courts. We also began our E-Court implementation, and in 13-15 was a big year for us as far as implementing a lot of courts. And every time an implementation took place, some of the collections were deferred a little bit into the later period. And so in 15-17, we were collecting some of those collections as well. And then we show some projections for 17-19, where we expect some increases in collections. Part of this is due, we feel, to the success of the E-Court program. We're a person-based system now, rather than a case-based management system. The Department of Revenue has a new system. We feel some of those efficiencies and benefits of those new systems are being realized in dollars. We also recognize a major piece of this is a stronger economy. So we're having some additional revenues, and part of that will be collections we'll talk about in a minute. The next slide is just some of the details I spoke about. We wanted to provide that to you for future reference to explain that revenue chart. In slide 44,
hold on, this is... Sorry, will you go back one slide? I'm just still processing in my mind. So on the court fines and assessments for 2017 and 2019, why do you anticipate a $10 million or $12 million jump there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at the categories specifically, we show the biggest jump in the criminal fines account. Mm-hmm. And so we are expecting collections to increase quite a bit. A bunch of that has to do with increases in photo radar collections. Third-party collections is also going to be a big increase. So we'll show you in a later slide how our collections activities, so sending debt out to Department of Revenue and our third-party collections agencies, is actually a substantial increase. So while our case filings are down, we're actually doing better on collecting older debt, and so we're going to have a revenue jump. I don't know that will, it always depends on the kinds of actions the legislature takes, and as well as the economy. So we don't know that will continue. Is a long-term growth of that kind of a jump, but in the 17-19 biennium, we do expect collections to increase, and we'll show you that in a collection slide.
Thank you.
So this is just a picture of 1719 funding, where we think that's going to come in at about $271 million of total revenues. And this is where it's going to be coming from or going to. So the general fund is going to collect about 43% of these funds, of these dollars. Criminal fine accounts, another large piece at 38%. Some of it will go to legal aid, a smaller portion. And then cities and counties are going to get about 12% of that distribution. This is where police force cites into the circuit court rather than into a justice or municipal court. And so we share some of the revenue back to the city or county to pay for those costs. I'm going to turn my comments now to the collection. And this is, I think, going to get to Representative Stark's question. Collections first start in the court. And so court staff take collections right at the counter. They also work taking collection payments over the phone. They set payment plans, and they monitor those payment plans. And then they'll input into the system some of the details of the status of a debtor. When a debtor avoids the efforts, then automated processes started to kick in, and automated collections processes start to kick in. And that's managed by the central, the OSCA staff. We begin to do things like impose license sanctions or intercept state tax refunds. And if we send out notices, and if those are all ignored, then we'll send that debt out to a professional collection agency, either the Department of Revenue or one of the three private firms that we've contracted with. Our central staff manages that collection referral and getting those cases back from collections, getting payments put into the right places. They also work to create new efficiencies and pilot programs that may create success for our collections. We do have quite a bit of outstanding liquidated and delinquent debt. Often it overshadows some of the other things that we're doing, and so I wanted to bring up this chart just to show some of our successes. In the upper left-hand corner, that pie there shows that we've created, or over all time, we've collected in full on 91% of the cases that have been processed to the courts. So 9% of those cases, we pull that out and we show that in the bottom right-hand corner. That's what, of those 9% of our cases, just over half of them are felony cases that are outstanding. A quarter of them are violations, and almost another quarter is misdemeanors, or a fifth. So that's pretty difficult types of debt to collect, and we put that out to collection agencies, and we continue to cycle that through our collection agencies until it's either collected or the judgment expires. We have a lot of work to do in our collections, but I wanted to show this because I feel that we do have some successes that we can also pull from. This chart shows the amount of dollars that were collected by the Department of Revenue, also our third-party collection agency. So the bulk of it, as you see, is coming in from the Department of Revenue. They're successful in collecting our debt, and we also refer a lot of our new debt to them initially. And this is where I think it gets to Representative Stark's earlier question. So we're projecting for the current biennium to actually collect a significant amount over the last biennium. And in 1719, there's another 20% increase in collections revenues coming in. This is the efforts of our collection agencies. It's significant changes. It's good changes. We think a lot of it has to do, like I said, with an improved economy. Some of it has to do with improved collection systems. And some of it has to do with some new types of new influx of collections on increases of Multnomah parking cases, as well as photo radar cases. The flip side is we're doing really well on the collections, and so we have to pay those folks to do those collections for us. So this almost mirrors the previous slide, but this is what we end up paying back out to those collection agencies. As I mentioned a little earlier, we only pay them if they're successful and make a collection. We don't pay them to hold the debt or to process through it. They only get paid if they're successful. So we also, in this category, I wanted to show the other expenses that we pay. So we pay the Department of Revenue. We also pay collection agencies that we use. But we also pay for credit card fees. So when somebody pays online, on the phone, or in person, and they use their credit card, we have those credit card transaction fees. And so we're going to pay for them out of this account. And then the very small sliver at the top of the of each bar is the amount of fees that we're paying to the Treasury or to U.S. Bank for our transactions as well. It's a lot of money, but I think it's worth it. For every dollar we spend on our collections activities, we're receiving back over $5 in return. So that's quite a good return on an investment. And I wanted to mention that when we send a debt out to collections, we attach a fee to it that helps pay for the cost of collections. So when we get a payment back from a debtor and they've gone through a collections process, the amount that's coming back has a portion of it to pay for the collection cost that it incurred. And I'll show that in just a minute. So for 17-19, our collections costs, first of all, we expect to collect $92 million in revenue. I mentioned that's about a 20% increase over the current biennium. The cost of doing that, we're expecting that to be at about $16 million. I mentioned that we have this fee that we attach to the debt, and it sends out when someone makes a payment, a portion of their payment is the cost of collections. And we expect that fee to generate $16.5 million in revenue. So we're going to cover the cost, but that money that comes in goes straight into the general fund. And so the issue here is that our CSL budget is only set at $12.6 million. So we're not going to have enough money in our CSL to pay for the almost $16 million worth of collection costs. So we have developed Policy Option Package 413, which will help pay for successful collections. Tomorrow we'll talk more in detail about policy option packages, and that's when you'll see 413 lined out there with the other packages. This package will allow us to pay for the collections. We don't want to have to decrease any of that revenue that's coming in that's projected, that additional 20%. But because it's self-balancing, we would ask that you consider it as you consider our budget and hold the rest of our general fund harmless as you consider the appropriations and allocations. You could also consider other funding that fee. Then it would self-balance without going through a general fund appropriation process. Makes it a little more efficient, and there's still the limitation that you have to provide. So you'd have some insight onto how well we're doing with that process. That kind of ends my collections piece. We'll turn now. John will introduce himself and talk to us about our budget and budget reductions.
Before you do, yeah. Parker?
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So I knew a guy who owed money to the state, and I'm not sure what for. He was overpayment maybe, or he didn't pay child support or something. So he took off to California, worked for cash only, hid out, whatever. And this came up one time because he was bemoaning his woes of not having any money, and my wife said, well, why don't you get a job, which offended him greatly, but he said, but anyway, now he's drawing Social Security. I don't know how, because he only worked maybe 7 years of his life, and he lives in Portland, but so you can't go after Social Security, is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barker, we there are a lot of the maintenance payments we wouldn't be able to attach to.
Okay, thank you. I don't think it's that much of an amount, but it's just kind of as you, I'm sure, would like to have it anyway.
That's right.
Chair Stark, committee members, for the record, John Fagan, Oregon Judicial Department. I am the Fiscal Services Manager for the department. And if you don't mind, I'll jump right into a quick budget overview of the current service level budget. The chart here represents the 17-19 Chief Justice's current service level budget by fund type. $501 million in total funds. The vast majority of that is general fund, $462.8 million, or about 92.4% of the overall budget. On the general fund portion piece, as we discussed before, there is a debt service component to it, and that represents about $20.4 million. On the other fund side, we have, and this is the modified current service level budget. For the other fund, it's $37 million, about 7.4% of the budget. And we have a small sliver there representing federal funds for $1.3 million. A little more breakup on the 17-19 Chief Justice's current service level budget for the general fund component of it. Again, $462.8 million. Judicial compensation represents about 17% of that budget. About 69% of the remaining budget is allocated to the operations side of it, and the operations side include the circuit courts, appellate and tax courts, and the administrative and central support side. We have that one sliver there for the 4% of the budget being the debt service on the general fund side, and then we have various slices associated with the pass-throughs, mandated payments, third-party collections, and the Oregon E-Court appellate maintenance appropriation. Overall changes in the 17-19 CSL versus 15-17 LAB. The 15-17 LAB was $583 million. 17-19 CSL is $501. For general fund, the CSL for the general fund increased by approximately 6.9%. The largest increase areas were debt service, $1.6 million, salary costs, which include judicial compensation, $3.2 million, staff personal plan adjustment, $6.1 million, those are merit increases, state government service charges, $3.9 million, inflation, standard inflation applied to the S&S budget, $2.6 million, and PERS, $9.5 million. On the other fund side, for the CSL budget, the budget was reduced by approximately 75%. The first piece of this reduction was associated with the Oregon E-Court program, $17.6 million. That was the 15-17 amount for implementation. We're past implementation now, so that goes away. The Oregon Courthouse Capital Construction and Improvement Fund, or OCCCIF, $80 million. And again, remember on that, there's bonds that go into that, but there's also a limitation for the county match that gets deposited with the department and then returned to the county. So approximately half that fund would be associated with a county match that's given and then returned to them in a transaction. The State Court Technology Fund had a $5.5 million reduction associated with the modified CSL because at this point in time, the Technology Fund does not have enough revenues to be able to pay all of the expenditures that are needed out of that account. And lastly, the State Court Facility and Security account was reduced by $4.2 million. And this is reduced. This is related to two things. We've reduced it associated with the capital improvement funds associated with courthouse and state court facilities improvements. Every biennium, we come back in with a new set of requests associated with capital funds. So that is netted out of the budget, and there's a policy option package to address that. And also last biennium, there was $1.1 million of additional funding that was provided to bolster local security accounts. And that's also been netted out of the numbers. So that's the overall budget, CSL budget. Any questions before we go into reductions? All right. So the department is presenting information and possible impacts associated with a possible 15% reduction in general funds. But we're also presenting impacts from past general fund CSL reductions and, again, possible reduction items associated with the co-chair's budget framework based upon the judicial branch's reduction number. So a 15% general fund reduction for the department, since the department's CSL request is $462.8 million, a 15% reduction represents $69.42 million. Each 5% step associated with that is $23.14 million. The co-chair's framework had a 3.5% reduction for the judicial branch, which did not include debt service. That would equate to about $15.5 million at that $462.8 million. Back to the pie charts. This time we're representing the amount of general fund dollars in each of them. There's two up there, and the little slice represent 21.3% of the OJD budget is for items that are either protected under the Oregon Constitution, i.e. judicial comp that can't be reduced, or debt service that's non-reducible. That would mean that any type of cut that the department has to weather is going to be larger because those components can't be cut. So again, the budget, some items can't be cut. Again, judicial compensation, debt service. Again, they represent 21.3% of the overall OJD budget. The 15% reductions, if they were calculated on the overall $468 million of the OJD budget, that 15% reduction would result in a 19.06% cutback to those reducible items. Just for context, the co-chair's framework exempts debt service only. So in that one, the 3.5% reduction would equate to about a 4.25% reduction from reducible items. And that one just pulls out judicial comp. So in terms of, again, moving forward with the 15%, and again, that would be at 19.6%, operations, the operations budget, again, circuit courts, appellate tax court, and administration represents about $317.3 million. That 15 or 19.06% reduction would be almost $16.5 million. These reductions would fall primarily on OJD staffing levels in the courts and support operations. About 89% of the operations appropriation is personal services, so $281.3 million of that. Of the remaining 11% of the funding, about 5% of that funding goes back to other state agencies. It's either state government service charges, rent associated with DAS-managed buildings, charges for services by DAS, and AG charges, et cetera. So even out of the 11% that's left, 5% of that would be, quote unquote, would not be reducible by the department because they fund other programs and other state agencies. The other appropriations, if they also took their share of that 19.6% cut, third-party debt collections would be cut by $2.4 million. Again, that would reduce payments to DOR for collections. It would most likely eliminate the use of private collection firms. It would reduce state revenues, and again, it would make the situation worse in this fund because we're going to need additional money based upon we've got a policy option package for the additional money to be able to pay for anticipated collection activities during the 17-19 biennium. External pass-throughs would take a $3 million cut. That would reduce payments to the counties for mediation conciliation services and law libraries, but also would reduce payments to the Oregon Law Commission and the council and court procedures who get their funding through the department. Mandated payments would be reduced by $3.1 million. That would reduce the payments for jury services and court interpreter services. And we'd see a decrease in the amount of money available for the appellate e-court maintenance contracts. And that would probably, those are contractual relationships, and we'd have to probably pay those out of some other fund. For a little context, wanted to show what happened in prior biennium associated with CSL reductions. So we all had to weather the 9/11 difficult reduction time. The department was reduced by about approximately $54.6 million versus CSL, about a 15.5% reduction. The department eliminated 85 permanent FTE. For that biennium, it would have been even worse, but 168 positions were moved from general fund to other funds and were supported by the temporary surcharges we discussed earlier. Some courts were closed on Fridays, and hours were reduced. The department eliminated one OSCA division, all judge and staff training and other services, and also the employees, court staff were given furloughs, salary and hiring freezes, and also delayed equipment purchases. The difficult funding situation continued in 11-13. The CSL reduction associated there was about $53.8 million, at about a 14.4% reduction. The department was required to eliminate an additional 93 permanent FTE. The department held about 52 positions vacant for the majority of the biennium to be able to meet the CSL budget. There was a salary freeze and hiring restrictions. We had reduced court hours, and we'd reduced public-facing services at the court level. We also reduced specialty court support through the general fund, but some of this was backfilled through other fund grants through CJC and other sources. And then we had limited judge training and no staff training. This chart represents where the department was in terms of staff positions. This does not include judges. This is just OJD staff. Presently, OJD has about 9.5% fewer positions than in 7-9. You can see the little graph. Over the last couple of bienniums, the legislature has helped fund some of the priority spends for the department. So there has been an increase in the number of positions versus what we saw in 11-13. But the department is still 162.25 FTE below 7-9 levels. Lastly, I wanted to discuss how would OJD possibly implement the co-chair's reduction levels. Again, we've talked about the 3.5% for the branch. If this was applied at that level, it would be possibly about $15.5 million. The possible reducible items that the department would look at was, of course, the merit, freeze merit increases. That represents about $6.1 million of the budget. OJD is required to be in reasonable conformance to the rest of state government. So if the executive branch were to have increases, that could be a problem. But if the executive branch, of course, takes those, then it would be relatively easy for the department to do that also. The department could hold vacancies.
John.
Go on.
Before you go on that, the merit freeze, now most agencies aren't allowed to build in merit increases into their CSL levels. Will you share with the committee just a quick back story on why that is part of your guys' budget, why that's built in, and is that really a legitimate budget reduction given that it's not usually incorporated into CSL levels?
Co-Chair Stark, the department normally builds that in. We have over the last few biennia. The department, like the legislative branch, chooses if they include it or not. Mm-hmm. And then the executive branch normally does not include an increase for us in their normal merit package. So we tell the executive branch, are we including it or not? And then the executive branch, of course, doesn't have to include that in their own calculations. And we try to make that very clear that this is involved. This is a part of the increase, and again, it's consistent with what we did last biennium and the bienniums before.
And I know we are a long ways from making any sort of decisions on budgets throughout the building. I would love, though, if you guys have the opportunity to please propose one more option of if that was not to be included in your CSL and you had to come up with those reduction options. What would you substitute there? Thanks. Go ahead, back to holding vacancies.
Co-Chair Stark, committee members, again, holding vacancies would be possible. The $6 million level would be impactful to the department. That would have to be rolled out on a court-by-court basis. Each court would have to figure out how to implement that. Something like that may impact, again, court hours, the ability to answer phones, some of the public-facing services that we have. But it may also impact such things as specialty courts. Not all specialty courts are supported by grant funds. A lot of the cost of specialty courts is baked into our general fund. So while some of the cost of specialty courts associated with coordinator positions may be funded through CJC grants, the cost of the judge time, the cost of some of the court staff, court clerk time, is all in the department's general fund, and local courts would have to prioritize that based upon their ability to be able to service you know, provide services to the public. Services and supplies reduction, about $1.7 million. Minimize training, minimize travel, and delay equipment replacements. The other, the $15.5 million, the other items in our budget, mandated payments, pass-throughs, third-party collections would all have to also eat a piece of that $1.7 million that's left, and that would be spread evenly beyond, between them and would have similar impacts to those presented in the 15%, just again, not as much. So people like the Law Commission and if the Law Commission and the Council on Court Procedures would also see, you know, a 3.5% or 4% cut associated with their budgets.
And so on the services and supplies, if most of the CSL budgets are, you know, assuming 3.5% inflation in that category, do you know what that equates to percent for you guys of what would still be incorporated? Sorry. So if most of these budgets are assuming a 3.5% inflation on services and supplies and so forth. So if you cut services and supplies by $1.7 million, what would that inflation actually be, that number be? Does that question make sense?
I think that would, Co-Chair Stark, I think that would probably be relatively close. So the service and supplies budget, the inflation was $2.6 million, and that's across every services and supplies. So not only the service supplies associated with the operations side of it, but it would be the services and supplies associated with interpreters, with payments for jurors, with, you know, the third party as a piece of it. So that 1.7 plus the 1.7, if you add those two up, that's about 3.4 million, which would exceed the $2.6 million that we have calculated associated with the services and supplies inflation for the standard inflation rates.
Thank you for helping me to understand that.
I'll do the next one. So I think we're just about to end, and I apologize if we've gone a little quickly. I think we thought this was going to be a really popular topic, and so we prepared lots of time for questions. I want to talk just real briefly on our the Chief Justice recommended budget. And so John explained our CSL, and this is broken into, on the top you have the general fund, and on the bottom there's the other funds categories. And our CSL is actually lower in total funds than our current 1517 LAB amount. And this kind of shows a little bit of why. So the capital construction and improvement of funds on the bottom chart, that is a significant amount of money that we'll be requesting, or I should say limitation, because in actuality only half of it is funded by state bonds, and the other half would be county match, and it comes into the account before being returned to the county. So we wanted to show graphically that our Chief Justice's recommended budget, or our requested budget, has an increase of about 3.8% in the general fund arena, and quite a significant request down in the other funds arena. But a big portion of it, as I mentioned, is for the capital construction improvement funds. So tomorrow we're planning on discussing the policy option packages, and we'll get into some details about our technology fund. We'll get into some details about some of the other priorities, including judicial comp and the construction funding. But this is the end of our prepared slides for today. If you had any questions for us, we'd be happy to take those.
No questions? Senator Winters, is there anything else you want them to cover today? I know you just...
Well, I'm sorry I was late, but I was busy. In fact, I was hoping that the chief was going to be here because I have a side question for him. Oh, is he back there?
He's back there. He's
hiding. Okay, I need to talk to you about something else. I'm working on a piece of legislation, so I had to be in the office with Senator Pogranski and others, and so I will talk to you about it offline. But sorry I'm late. And I did bring your photo, and it's a beautiful one, by the way. Big, She was featured in the Oregonian, and I remembered to bring it today to give it to her. But, and if you haven't gone over the e-court yet, I'm sure you're going to do that in detail later. So I'll save my comments.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Mr. Co-Chair and subcommittee members, I would like to point out that tomorrow, in addition to OJD continuing with their budget presentation, we have scheduled a grant application. They've applied for a grant while the legislature was not in session and are requesting retroactive approval of that application. Those materials are posted in OLIS for tomorrow's meeting. If you're interested in looking at them before the meeting, or if you have any questions before the meeting, please let me know.
Thank you, gentlemen. And on that, we are adjourned. Yeah, we got here early. I don't know what takes Senator Winter so long. We get done early when I...
Damn.
That's because I had a lot of work to do.
Damn.
That's because I had a lot of work to do.